First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
In a city that's trending blue, can one of the best-known Democrats in town take the mayor's office? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a conversation with Donna Deegan about her potential political future, her breast cancer advocacy, and more. Get on the line now. Join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, the cost of caregiving in Florida, much higher than you think. We'll tell you about that, too, and some other news and notes for your Monday. But first this hour, former news anchor and Marathon founder Donna Deegan says she's strongly considering a run to become the next mayor of Jacksonville. This follows on her unsuccessful campaign for Congress. Now, the election isn't until 2023, but several candidates are already in the race. And last week, Deegan formed a new political committee, Donna for Duval. Duval did vote for Andrew Gillum, a Democrat, in the most recent governor's race, and for Joe Biden in 2020. It's trending more blue as demographics change in this city. That said, well-funded Republican candidates will have a strong bench of support. So what are the issues that will define this race? Donna Deegan is on the line to share her thoughts. Donna, always good to have you on the show. Good morning.
Melissa, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Already getting lots of calls for Donna Deegan as we talk politics, local politics, and more. Join us, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is also open. So you ran against John Rutherford last year, lost that race for Congress in District 4. That said, yeah, you raised a lot of money and had a strong showing in a very Republican district. You formed a political committee, Donna for Duval. Speculation is rampant. You're about to announce you will run for Jacksonville mayor. Can you confirm that speculation?
I will simply say what I have said to this point, and that is I've taken a first step, and I've formed the political committee, as you suggested, and have been asked about this, honestly, Melissa, for years and years, way before I ever ran for Congress. People have said, Donna, we wish you would consider running for mayor. And I just had to sit back and take a look at it, and I'm still doing that. But as you said, I think we ran a very strong race for Congress in a very gerrymandered district. We had one-third Democrats out of the 600,000 people that were in that district, and brought over, oh gosh, almost 100,000 votes from the last cycle, and had the strongest showing for any red county for a Democrat in the state. So I think that was a pretty successful run as far as you can take it in a gerrymandered district. But the truth is, you can't gerrymander the Duval County line, right? You can't gerrymander a citywide election. And that gives a lot of people hope that with the way trends are going, that there really is an opportunity there. You just have to, I think the important thing is you have to have something to offer, and you have to, I think I have been speaking to people in this city for a long time, and I think people know where my heart is. My heart is in public service. I've been serving this community for more than 30 years in one way or the other, and I would love to continue to do that in some capacity.
If you do announce soon, what will you run on? What do you see as the biggest priorities for this city for the next mayor to be focused on?
Well, you know, first of all, I think it is very important to have a mayor who is a visionary, somebody who has a vision for the city, somebody who has a long-term strategic plan for the city. But not only that, I really do think that sometimes, and if you really look at the way things have gone a lot of the time, we wait till the 11th hour of the 11th hour to do something in a second term of a mayoral, term to really account for all sorts of political calculations. And I think that is not me. I don't believe that would be a way that I would lead. I think that it is very important to have political will to get things done. So as important as it is to have vision, to have compassion, to have the ability to lead, which I think I have clearly shown over the course of my career, both as a journalist and as the leader of an organization that I think has brought a lot of good to Jacksonville. I think that political will is what we've been lacking. So it's very easy in the heat of difficult situations to come in and say, I'm going to do X, Y, or Z. But what we've seen over and over again in this city, and you've talked about it ad nauseum, is that we we make all sorts of proclamations, put all sorts of plans in place, but then there's no real accountability to follow that up. And I think that we have to have somebody with the political will to actually make things happen. And when I say make things happen, I think priority one really has to be to bring everybody in the city into the conversation, to make sure that we are fulfilling promises that we made 50 years ago that we still haven't fulfilled and have given a lot of lip service to.
What are some of the unfulfilled promises that you think are holding this town back, and what would you prioritize as the city's top political leader?
Well, again, I think the promises of consolidation, you've heard that over and over again. I don't think, I reject the argument that you have to choose between fulfilling the promises of consolidation. In other words, creating the type of Jacksonville that would provide quality of life for everybody, that would not just be focused on a few, but would provide quality of life for everybody. And that starts with things that are as simple as infrastructure needs, roads and lights and sidewalks and plumbing, and the fact that we don't want all of our city streets to flood all the time. I think those are things that we have talked about a lot, but have never made a real priority in this city for a lot of people. I think for minority businesses in this city that have heard over and over and over again, you're going to be a part of the business community. We hear all about the business plans for the city, but very often those people are left out. I think that's because we don't put the proper accountability necessarily into place in the way that we structure things. And I think it comes down to political will. I think there are people in this city that are very, very comfortable within the constructs of how things have always happened because, frankly, they continue to get theirs. And I think that we have to have a wider view. And what I have always done and have done from the time that I was a journalist to the time that I created the foundation and then the National Marathon to finish breast cancer, because of my own life experiences, I have realized and have taught the importance of not only listening to all the voices, but bringing all the voices into the conversation. And in so many ways, from the way we present our city budget to the way that we eventually either implement things or don't, we simply haven't done a very good job of bringing everybody in. And I think that we need to do that. And I think it comes with the political will to do so.
Before the new mayor even gets to that point, though, they have to win. Let's talk a little bit about the logistics around this race. Jacksonville has what's called in some quarters, a jungle primary. So it's nonpartisan. In the first election in early 2023, the top two vote getters will advance to the runoff. Assuming you get in, you will certainly be the most high profile Democrat in the race. And you have a very good chance of getting to the runoff with whomever the Republican candidate is. Jack's Chamber President Daniel Davis is widely expected to run. He has a strong base of fundraising support already. Councilman Matt Carlucci is running. He's out there raising money, and there will be others. But let's say you make it to the runoff. How do you see this race shaking out? As I mentioned, the county is trending more Democrat. That said, the Republican candidate will be extremely well-funded, will be on TV wall-to-wall in the final week or two. If you're the Democrat trying to make an historic change for this city, because you would be the first woman elected mayor in Jacksonville history, how do you plan to compete against that?
Well, look, I will say this, Melissa, that in a race in which very few people gave us a chance to win, we were able to raise over $1 million. 98% of that money came from the grassroots. I'm talking about small dollar donations of $25, $50, $100. That's where we had our bread and butter. And so I expect to bring in some people that want to invest heavily in this campaign if we should decide to run it. But at the same time, I really think that where our strength is and always has been with people. And I think that's really, when I talk about, you know, a compassionate visionary view for Jacksonville, I think people have connected with me on that level for a very long time. I think people know where my heart is. There is a reason why so many people that initially start in the nonprofit community venture into politics eventually, sometimes at first, you know, very reluctantly, because it is a blood sport, as you certainly know. Mm-hmm. But it's because we have the ability to see the pain points in the community, and we know what can happen when we address those pain points. And I think it's been a while since we have had somebody in a position of leadership at the top that has that as the priority. But what we learn in the nonprofit community, as the work we do is essential and fantastic, is that unless we have that coupled with good public policy, it can only go so far. And I think that's why you see the interest there. But at the heart of it is not a desire for power. It is a desire to serve the community. And at my heart, I am a public servant, and I believe that will resonate with people in this community.
Now, let me,
is a very long-winded way of saying that I think we can raise plenty of money. I really do think we can, but I think it's mostly going to come from the grassroots.
I have to tell you, you're talking like a candidate. Why don't you make it official and announce it right on this show that you are running?
You know what, Melissa? I am looking very hard at it. That is all I can really say to you right now. But I really want to be very intentional and deliberate with this. That is my process, and that is how I've always done everything. You know, I still think like a journalist that way.
I understand.
I want all the boxes to be checked.
I want to be,
you know, so let's talk about anything you want to talk about, but I'm not ready to go there yet.
Let's go to some calls then. How about that? Because we have jammed lines.
That sounds great. Let's do it.
For Donna Deegan, 549-2937, Jim in Riverside. Hi, Jim. Good morning. Go ahead.
Yes. Good morning. Thank you, Donna. I wanted to ask, last year when we were all going through the pandemic, my wife was also going through her battle with breast cancer. And I wanted to say, considering what you do with the marathon and the foundation, how do you square that with the kind of attacks you've already received from the right? Is it socialism to have people be able to be treated for their cancer and not get broken in every other way? I mean, how can you square that?
Thank you for that.
What you actually do, what they're saying about you.
Yeah, Jim, thank you for that. You know, the Duval County Republican Party put out a statement, Donna, calling you far left. What about these these remarks, these attacks?
Well, I think it's very interesting what appalls and does not appall the Duval GOP. But I will say this. Anybody that knows me and has followed me over the years knows exactly who I am. I will say that there's a blessing and a curse to having lived your entire life in the public eye, right? Everybody knows me. Everybody knows what I'm about, and everybody knows what I stand for, and they know that's ridiculous. I mean, this whole atomic bomb that they dropped on me the day that my name even gets mentioned as a possible candidate, I think just goes to show you where we are right now in our political discourse. And it's really, really sad. And when it comes to a local race, you know, that especially, I mean, come on, can we stop the culture wars for 5 minutes and actually talk about issues? But to their point, no, I am not far left. I am certainly not a socialist, as everybody knows. They called me a failed congressional candidate. We've already addressed that. I performed extremely well in a gerrymandered district. And as far as saying that I am unfit to lead the city of Jacksonville, I would put my credentials as a 30-year servant of this community up against anybody that would run for this office. I think whether I was holding the powerful people to account as a journalist, listening to people in Jacksonville and telling their stories, or creating a foundation that helps our underserved community and brings thousands of people to Jacksonville every year to bring millions in economic impact and to help underserved communities and research. I mean, I think those things, people know what I am about. It is all about service for me. And I say as often as people will hear me say it, it is by God's grace that I am here. And the reason that I am here is to serve. And I will continue to do that. And no amount of lying about me or fear-mongering or any of the things that unfortunately are such a part of our politics and just should not be, no amount of that is going to change the fact that people in this city know me. And they can scaremonger and fearmonger all they want, but at the end of the day, everybody knows I am not a far left socialist. That's ridiculous. And it hurts my heart a little bit that somebody who would say that somebody who's been a lifelong advocate for this community is any of those things. But it's, you know, that is where our politics are and where I hope desperately to move us off of as we continue this conversation.
Justin in Jacksonville Beach. Hello, Justin.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is, do you stand by your endorsement of Andrew Gillum for governor, even after his admitted infidelity and drug use in a Miami hotel?
Thanks, Justin. You did campaign for Andrew Gillum. He did win this county very narrowly when he ran for governor. What about this?
Yeah. Andrew Gillum is my friend. I think Andrew Gillum is an extraordinary talent and really a good person. I think that all of us have things in our lives that we regret. I think that Andrew Gillum has taken responsibility for the things that he wishes he had done better. But I will say this, Melissa, you know, those issues that Andrew Gillum brought to the forefront, the fact that we need to expand Medicaid to our most medically needy, we need to invest in public education, we need to acknowledge that our climate is changing and we must address those things. The fact that he believed that it was so important to bring all those voices into the room that very seldom get heard and talked about. I mean, sometimes when I think about some of the policies that we have had, the voter suppression, the lack of acknowledgement of environmental issues, all those things that the Amendment 4, how different would Amendment 4 be? You know, so
speaking of resiliency, let me just jump in. Let me jump in if I could, because that's such an important issue for Duval County. We have a chief resiliency officer now. We have the city council looking at resiliency efforts. If you were elected mayor of Jacksonville, how would you prioritize resiliency and climate mitigation efforts for Jacksonville?
Well, it's got to be a top priority, right? I mean, it has to be. You know, there's no amount of success that our city can have if we don't address that crisis. And I'm thrilled to see that we have a new resiliency officer. She sounds like she's very well qualified. I can't wait to have a conversation with her. But, you know, that is something we must address. I mean, our streets flood all the time in this city, and that's just one tiny part of a future that we are going to see get increasingly worse if we don't address these issues. And I think that goes back again to priorities. I think we've given a lot of lip service to things. We've got to start really walking in that direction. And I think, again, that comes, we've taken a great first step. I think we have to continue to put accountability measures in place. And I think it's so great to have somebody who realizes, you know, what an important priority this needs to be for our city, because we are a very vulnerable city when it comes to sea level rise and to all sorts of aspects of this situation. So, you know, the word resiliency can mean a lot of things, but I think at the very end of the day, this is the reason why not only do we have to address the things that we are already facing right now, like street flooding and neighborhood flooding, but we need somebody who is willing to look out to develop a plan far into the future. And frankly, I'm disappointed that we haven't seen more pushback against efforts to take local control away from us in ways that we can deal with that from the state. How many times have you heard people push back on that?
Yeah. Not to cut you off, just lots of people waiting on hold. AJ.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sorry. You know me, Melissa. Once you hit go, I'll talk forever. So I apologize.
No worries. We're used to it with public figures, frankly, because you guys are good talkers. let's go to AJ in East Arlington. AJ, go ahead.
That was funny, Melissa. But anyhow, this will be a historic election. We have two very respected women running for top offices in Jacksonville, Donna for mayor and Lakeisha Burton for sheriff. I just want to know from Donna, how will she work with Lakeisha Burton and the sheriff's office in bringing the community together.
Thank you, AJ. You know, Donna Deegan, that would be a first if we had a female mayor and a female sheriff both elected in the next cycle. Lakeisha Burton is already generating a lot of support in her run for sheriff, including from Republicans. She'll need that to win. How do you see, if say you're elected and you're working with a female sheriff, that would be a first for Jacksonville?
Well, let me just say, first of all, that Lakeisha has just such a compelling personal story, and I think it drives a lot of the things that she does. I think she sees the importance of community policing. I've heard her speak so many times, and I'm so impressed with how she sees the way to reconnect, really, with a community that sometimes has lost trust. And she has been working in that community for so long. She's been part of it. I think her story is one of absolute resiliency. And I just think she would do an amazing job, because she is a person who sees that in order to build that trust, you have to be a part of the community. You have to be in there and building relationships. And I think everything comes down to that, building relationships with people in the community and saying to people, you matter as much as anybody else in any zip code in this city. You matter, and you can trust me because I'm here with you doing the work side by side. And I think, you know, in some ways we've gotten away from some of that. And she's a person that I think gives great voice to what really needs to happen in that scenario. So I'm looking forward to seeing what she does. She's quite inspirational, I think.
Daryl in St. Augustine. Hi, Daryl. You're on the air.
Good morning. Good luck. And I hope that you have learned that playing defense doesn't win elections. I heard you speak down here in St. Augustine. Rutherford labeled you anti-Second Amendment, and you spoke for quite some time about how you weren't. I just heard the fellow on there talk about how they were going to label you socialist. You talked about how you're not. It's a two-word answer when they label you. That's ridiculous. And then go on to what they are. I really get frustrated when I hear Democrats and people all play defense. As soon as the Republicans label you, you play defense. Start labeling them. Republicans are racist. Republicans hate democracy. Republicans hate. Attack, don't defend. They are ridiculous and greedy, and you will lose again if you do not play offense instead of defense.
Daryl, thanks. This race will be a hard-fought race, and there will be a lot of strong political rhetoric like that. Will you run that kind of campaign? Because certainly whomever your opponent is will be running that kind of campaign against you.
Listen, here is my message. Whether I am continuing to work in the nonprofit world or whether I am running, you know, in whatever capacity, okay? And that is that we need compassionate, visionary leadership for the city of Jacksonville. We need that. We need optimistic, compassionate, visionary leadership.
So you're not going to run a negative campaign is what I hear you saying.
Look, what I'm saying is, Melissa, is I think people are worn out from that stuff. And I'm not saying people won't do it. I'm not saying that. And look, in regards to his comment, I think there is a difference between speaking up for yourself and running a nasty campaign. I think what people are looking for is vision. I think they are looking for vision. You want to find the stakeholders, you want to find the people that can actually bring that vision to fruition, which is exactly what I did when I started the foundation and the marathon. And you want to bring the community together, engage everybody to invest in that vision, make it better, and make it a reality. That's what people want to hear. They want to hear what you're going to do for them, not all the things, the nasty things. Look, I think we have had so many years of that now. And I think that, frankly, we've had some pretty toxic political you know, consultants that have been in this city that have continued to perpetuate that type of thing. But I don't think we do
And let me just say,
when we jump into that, I just don't think we do better.
Those consultants are working with Daniel, who I think you're referring to, are working with Daniel Davis, the Jack's Chamber president, who's already raised millions before even announcing for mayor. They're very good at micro-targeting voters. They will send out flyers denigrating you, your personal life, your political views. Those kinds of attacks, unfortunately, work. And so for all of the supporters you have out there, and you do have a strong base of support, I think I'm hearing from listeners out there, they want you to go on the offensive, because I think they believe that those kinds of attacks might doom your candidacy if it becomes official.
I think, again, I'm not saying that I will not. I have made it very clear from the time that I was a journalist for 30 years that I have absolutely no problem speaking truth to power. Okay? That has not ever been an issue for me. So I don't think people should take what I'm saying as a weakness. What I'm saying is, I don't think that you win elections by punching down. I just don't. And I think that what people are looking for from me is, what are you going to do? What will you bring to Jacksonville that we haven't seen? Aren't we really tired of the two steps forward and one step back for years and years and years and years? Are we tired of the renderings? Are we tired of the promises that aren't kept?
We're good at renderings in this town. That is one thing we can all agree on.
But Melissa, let's make it not a joke anymore.
I know. I hear you. I know.
Let's actually show people how we're going to get there. And look, they're going to do what they're going to do. But I do think I have to be true to myself at the end of the day, who I am. And I think that I am a positive, visionary person, and that's what I'm going to share with people.
And all of that said,
there'll be plenty of people out there defending me.
All of that said, when will you make it official?
I have no timeline in terms of making a final decision. I am in the process now of doing exactly what I'm doing, and that is going out there. And here's the other reason that I wanted to start this now. Because with all due respect, I love you and I love all my fellow journalists. But when you all get a narrative going, it's tough to dial back that narrative. And the narrative that was developing was, oh, Democrats don't have anybody. Oh, they don't have a bench. Oh my, the Republicans are already raising so much money. And at the end of the day, you know what? We have a fabulous group of young Democrats who are really anxious to get in there and make a difference. And we need to develop those people. And so one of the reasons I wanted to start when I did was to say, hey, you know, line up, guys. You know, whoever is going to get in this, let's all get in here and let's give people a reason to be optimistic and to come out and vote. You hear over and over again, oh, Democrats can't win in an off-year election. We haven't given them a reason. Let's give them a reason. And that's really the reason that I'm coming out now. It's not just for whatever we do at the top of the ticket. It's to say, let's line up. Let's go. Let's give people an optimistic vision of this city that we can have if we put the right priorities in place. And I think that's really what it comes down to. I'll say it a million times. Political will is what gets it done. Not occasional, steps in that direction, not just lip service, not 11th hour proclamations, but actually having people who have as a priority bringing in all voices in the city of Jacksonville and creating a quality of life for people here that everybody can share and that will make our kids and their kids want to come back here and stay here.
Well, Donna Deegan, I want to thank you for your time on the show. And
thank you, Melissa.
And we will hopefully have you back when it becomes official, along with continuing to host the other candidates for mayor on this program. Donna Deegan, thank you.
I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to talk about the marathon.
But
again, at some point,
yes.
At some point, let's do that.
things got away from us.
It's okay.
We'll come back on that.
We have a new date. We're moving a week earlier so that we can watch our Jaguars win the Super Bowl the following week.
There you go.
That's the big news.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Thanks, Melissa.
And
have a great day.
You too. And much more still ahead later in the hour. St. John's County celebrates its 200th anniversary, but up next.
when you think about taking care of an aging relative, it might be giving them rides to the doctor. It might be providing medical care. Those things take up some of your time, but they also take some money.
The cost of caregiving in Florida, higher than you think, in a moment. Well, there are approximately 48 million people in this country providing care to an adult family member or friend. Family caregivers are the backbone of our long-term care system, but they are breaking under the strain from physical, emotional, and financial challenges. A new study conducted by AARP shows the importance of supporting caregivers, not only with resources, but financial help too. For more, I spoke with Jeff Johnson, State Director for AARP Florida. Hey, Jeff. Good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me on, Melissa.
Well, tell us about this study. First, let's explain what a family caregiver is and their importance.
Yeah, thank you. I think a lot of people are family caregivers and don't know it. So when you think about taking care of an aging relative, it might be a parent or it might be a sibling or a spouse, you're doing things to help them. It might be giving them rides to the doctor. It might be coordinating their medicine. It might be providing medical care. And those things take up some of your time, obviously, and they certainly take a lot of emotional bandwidth. But they also take some money out of your pocket, too. And that's what our recent study just tried to quantify in some new ways.
Yeah. What did the AARP study uncover about the financial strains of being a family caregiver?
Well, what we found is that more than three quarters, 78% of family caregivers said that they are spending some money out of pocket for caregiving expenses. And by some money, the average response was about $7,250, actually $7,242. That's a lot of money. That's for most of them, the average financial strain was 26% of their annual income. And obviously those are averages. There's a much wider range than that. But that's a significant impact on somebody's take-home pay, on their ability to do the other things that they need to do to make a living, support a family.
Sure. And in the pandemic in particular, this problem has gotten more intense, hasn't it?
Oh, my gosh. And we have talked in the past about the impact of COVID-19 on Florida's nursing home system. I think that that has made many families think even harder about how we try to help to keep mom or dad at home. And so 40%, 42% of the respondents said that they've spent more time on caregiving during the pandemic, and about the same number have also said they've spent more money on family caregiving during the pandemic.
This has been hard on everyone, but your study finds older caregivers and caregivers of color are under the most stress. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, again, because this is such a wide variety of people. I mean, think about it. Last time we did a count, which was before the pandemic, there were about 3 million Floridians who are family caregivers. And I suspect many people don't even think about themselves in that way. And the range of spending is really broad, the range of impact. So, yes, older family caregivers are spending more money, though we've also found there are a lot of Gen Z and millennial family caregivers who are actually spending more of their income. About 37% of Gen Z and millennial family caregivers' income is going to providing care. And also, to your point, the African-American population and the Hispanic Latino population both see a much larger percentage of their income going to caring for family members. So it's a very, very significant piece of our financial picture that I don't think we pay that much attention to.
So with all of that said, what can we do to help this population that's keeping everything going right now, caregivers, and that is under so much strain?
Well, I appreciate that. There's a range of things. There's one really specific one that that AARP is trying to raise awareness of right now. There's actually a federal bill, and if you'll believe it, it is one with bipartisan support in both houses.
Shocking.
Of Congress, which doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So it underscores that that family caregiving really is not a partisan or a political issue. It's a family issue. And what it would do is provide a tax credit for working family caregivers. So up to $5,000 of the expenses that they're incurring as family caregivers could be kind of given a break on their taxes. It's a small piece. It doesn't cover everybody or everything, but it is a start. And I think that from AARP Florida's perspective, we would add to that that the other major thing that the state could really do is increase the amount of long-term care services that are available at home or in the community. Because for many of these people, yes, they could use that additional money in their pocket to make up for all the money that they're spending on their loved ones, but they could also use a break. And having, you know, whether it's a local senior center that has programming as an adult daycare or some respite care to come into their home so they can run some errands or just,
sure,
you know, get a moment. Those sorts of things would be really valuable. And those are things the state can do in addition to the Credit for Caring Act at the federal level.
And while you advocate for that, of course, AARP has resources for caregivers, too. Tell us about those.
Yeah, indeed. So on our website at aarp.org/caregiving, you're going to find a lot of information, a lot of kind of tools to help you figure out what you need and how to find it, including some ways to find local resources. And we also, one of the things that we find with family caregivers is they experience a lot of isolation because they essentially have a yet another job, if you will, of caring for a loved one, and one that we don't talk about enough. So there are some efforts to try to connect family caregivers with each other so they can share stories and life hacks and, you know, solutions to problems. I also probably need to point out that the state of Florida has a network of area agencies on aging that also provide a lot of great local resources for family caregivers, and the Elder Helpline, which is 1-800-96-ELDER, will help people connect to those local resources.
Check that out. Check out AARP.org as well. Jeff Johnson, State Director for AARP Florida. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
Well, the world watched in wonder Sunday as Virgin Galactic founder Richard Branson blasted into space. Coming up this weekend, you too can celebrate space along with some science and music at the city's Museum of Science and History. Eddie Whistler is VP of Education Services and Director of the Brian Gooding Planetarium at the Mosh. Hey, Eddie, good morning.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. So before we talk about what's happening at the Mosh, what were your thoughts about Branson and his big, his little rocket ride into space over the weekend?
Look, these are the first steps of us kind of wandering out of our little, like, you know, when my kids were little, they had like the little toddler zone that we would put up the borders around, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the big kids get out first. And so that's all of those early astronauts and pioneers. But now more normal type folks are going to start getting out there. And so I just kind of see it as this big picture thing where, you know, we're going to start having some folks like Branson, like celebrities. But pretty soon that kind of stuff is going to become much more, it's going to be a worn path, and it's going to be something that's accessible to more and more people over time. So
Do you want to be one of those people? Do you want to go into space?
Oh my gosh. I can't even put on VR headsets without feeling sick all the rest of the day. So I think I'm going to pass.
yeah, you can count me in that group too. I think I'll stay right here on the ground. But at the same time, there is such a fascination with space exploration, and you will be capitalizing on that this Saturday at the Mosh. It's a Rock the Moon concert and planetarium experience. What's on the agenda?
So a live band, a local band called Skyview, who writes music about space exploration and space, and they sound really good, and in our planetarium it makes so much sense. So, you know, we have just We have live music. We've got the full dome images that are going to be going up, you know, from the space era and all having to do with space. I mean, that's what we do day in and day out, is go ahead and put space imagery on the full dome, only this time it's linked up in time to what's going to be happening with lights and lasers and live music here in the planetarium. So we're excited because it's really the first time that we're doing this type of a thing that isn't like a that isn't a fundraiser or something like that. We've done a couple of those in the past, and now we feel like we can open up as a venue and have people coming in and checking out the music. So we have some. If you come to the website, themosh.org, then we've got some videos to promote it, and you can link up with the band and all that kind of stuff.
Very nice. July 20th, I'm told by our brilliant director, Josh Torres, is the 52nd anniversary of the moon landing. So this is great timing. And you're going to let people go up and look through your telescope, too, which sounds like a lot of fun.
So yes, but we don't have a telescope here at the museum. What we're having is our local astronomy kind of collective, the Northeast Florida Astronomical Society, is going to be here showing off telescopes beforehand and have them on display in the exhibits, and then have a couple set up outside, you know, weather permitting, because... But it's the perfect first quarter moon in order to look through, and so telescopes will also abound. And you're right, we are celebrating the 52nd anniversary of the Apollo moon landing. So July 20th, to anybody who's space-oriented, is always a summertime date that we're all familiar with, for sure. So
yeah.
On the 17th, we'll celebrate that, because who wants that? You know, we're not going to have a concert on... We're not going to have a concert on a Tuesday.
Eddie, on a Saturday. Eddie, when do you think we'll get to Mars? People.
Get to Mars. People. I'm banking on a, like, 2035, 2045 window. Do I get a window?
Sure.
Okay.
That's a good window.
As we get closer, I'll change my mind based on any work that we have done or have not been able to accomplish along the way.
In the meantime, come on out to the Mosh Saturday night. It's the Rock the Moon Concert and Planetarium Experience with local rock band Skyview and the Northeast Florida Astronomical Society. A Q&A, live music, a laser light show, and you might get the chance to take a peek at the skies through some cool telescopes, weather permitting. And Eddie will be there. Eddie Whistler, VP of Education, Director of the Planetarium at the Mosh. It sounds like a lot of fun. So have fun with it, Eddie. I know a lot of people will be enjoying it.
Yeah, don't forget the adult beverages that will be here as well. That's always noteworthy.
Always good to have that, too. Okay.
So have
fun and
we
to the moon.
To seeing everybody.
Yeah, come on out, everybody. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll head down the road to St. John's County, see what they have planned this week to celebrate their 200th anniversary. That's next.
Farrah and Farrah, dedicated to representing the injured people in Jacksonville for over 40 years. Learn more at farrahandfarrah.com or 396-5555. Farrah and Farrah's accident attorneys are here for you, here for good.
Columbia College offers virtual, in-seat, and online classes for undergraduate and graduate degrees. Columbia College, proudly serving veterans and active military. Info at ccis.edu/Jacksonville or 904-338-9150.
Recent books on Florida history and culture look at journalist Jane Wood Reno, attorney Chesterfield Smith, the Yamato Colony, and Florida's healing waters. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with award-winning authors. We'll discuss the West Florida Rebellion and Maroons in Florida. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, The Startup Wife, we talk with Tamima Anam. Her new witty novel is about a young married couple who found a startup that uses algorithms to customize ceremonies and rituals for people who aren't religious. The platform's success turns the husband into a messiah figure, even though it's the wife who designed it. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Meet Lisa from St. Louis, Missouri. She's one of millions now looking at work very differently.
I left my job from marketing. Our crew got cut in half and the burnout was just so real that it was time to move on. This is a great move for me, and I'm interested to see why other people are quitting their jobs at the same time.
What's driving the great resignation? That story next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. St. John's County has several events planned this week to celebrate their 200th anniversary. Yes, Christina Parrish Stone of the St. John's Cultural Council is on the line. Hey, Christina.
Hi, Melissa. Good morning.
Good morning. So St. John's County was formed 200 years ago. People might not realize that. There's lots going on this week. A few things people can come out and enjoy, right?
That's right. We started the celebration this past weekend with the reenactment of the transfer of flags from Spain to the United States. And starting this Saturday, we will celebrate the founding of St. John's County, which is one of two original counties in the state. At one point, St. John's County was the entire state east of the Suwannee River. So we're starting Saturday, July 17th with a history symposium at Lewis Auditorium at Flagler College. That will be from 2 to 4. It's free and open to the public. And we've got great speakers, including a professor from Flagler who is sort of the expert on Henry Flagler, Gail Phillips from the Lincolnville Museum. We have a representative who's going to be talking about Menorcan and Spanish culture. But it's not just talks. We also have music from Sam Pacetti, refreshments, costumed actors who are going to be representing all of the time periods of the last 200 years. And again, that's all free and open to the public.
How did all this come together? I don't think most St. John's County residents might even have known the history of the region.
You know, I think that's probably true. The county started talking about organizing a celebration during COVID. And because of that, the plans took a little while to come together. And once things started opening up, a number of groups, local governments, and different agencies of government got together to try to create some activities to help educate folks about our county's rich history. In addition to the symposium at Flagler, we have a really exciting event that the Cultural Council put together, and that's a photography exhibition that includes images from local photographers. We have at least 24 who participated, and they represent all five districts of the county. It's called From River to Ocean, and that opens Monday, July 19th at the St. John's County Administration Building with a reception from 6 to 8 and a chance for the public to meet the photographers, view those beautiful images, and again, we're trying to make it fun with some music from the House Cats and refreshments. Then we go on to celebrate the actual anniversary of the day the county was formed prior to the county commission meeting on Tuesday morning, July 20th at 8:30. and wrap things up on Wednesday, July 21st at 10 o'clock at the County Administration Building with a time capsule ceremony.
Wow. Those are always fun, aren't they? That's a great idea, putting things in a time capsule.
Yes. Unfortunately, I don't think I'll be around to see the capsule.
Yeah, to see it open.
Sealed for 50 years.
Oh, man.
Maybe I can hang in there, or one of my grandchildren can be there. I know the Cultural Council is going to be including the catalog for this photography exhibition that shows all the beautiful cultural landscapes around the county, and about 30 other local organizations are bringing items to represent St. John's County in 2021.
And going beyond the events of this week, as you head up the St. John's Cultural Council, there's just a lot happening in St. John's County culturally, and you've been leading the way on that.
Well, a lot of people have been involved in arts, culture, and heritage activities in St. John's County for a long time. And we've reached a point, I think, in our country where we're talking about our history more broadly, and we're trying to be more inclusive of all of the people in our country. And that's one thing that we're focusing on in St. John's County. And at the Cultural Council, there are stories. As you know, I lived in Jacksonville for many years and have always been really interested in history and spent a lot of time in St. Augustine. But in spite of that, I never knew the stories of places like Fort Mosaic, which was the first legally sanctioned settlement for free black people in this country, dating back to the 1700s. I didn't know about all of the activities in St. Augustine around the civil rights movement, many of which contributed directly to Lyndon Johnson signing the Civil Rights Act. And we have this incredible Spanish history, of course, going back five centuries, and we'll continue to tell those amazing stories. But St. John's County was really kind of the original melting pot. Unlike a lot of the British colonies, we had all kinds of people from all over the world from the very beginning. And there's so much of their stories still to be uncovered. And it's a lot of fun to be involved in helping other organizations share that information.
Very nice. Check it out this week. It's the 200th birthday or anniversary for St. John's County. Multiple events to take part in. Christina Parrish Stone of the St. John's Cultural Council, thank you so much, and have fun.
Thank you, Melissa. Thanks for having us on.
Sure thing. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Heather Schatz, a St. John's County resident. Josh Torres is show director. We also thank editorial director Jessica Palumbo and digital editor Bill Bortsfield and all of our great news team. Keep those emails coming. Send them to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and catch our podcast up later today on all platforms and through the WJCT app. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.